Stitch was in a weird Disney World ride where, like, you just sit in a room and it's like a comedy club, and at some point he farts and you smell it. I'm not making this up. This is a legit story.
That's not real.
And it's just...
What part of Epcot is that in?
You guys, there's cool ways to spend 10 grand, and there are not cool ways. And sniffing Stitch's farts is not a cool way to spend 10 grand. I will tell you that right now. Hello and welcome to episode number 498 of the podcast. I'm your host, Knox McCoy.
And I'm your other host, Jamie Golden.
The podcast is a show dedicated to delightful idiocy, and we're committed to educating you on things entertained but do not matter.
To find out more about these transitive pursuits, check us out at knoxandjamie.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Podcast, and we're on Twitter at PodcastPod.
Thanks for joining us this week as we are going to be talking the stolen lunch money report.
But before we do that, did you guys know that in August of this year, we will be celebrating 10 years of the podcast. Knox, have you ever worked anywhere that long?
Not even close.
No, not even close. Me either. Not even close. Guys, so to celebrate, the Podcast Live is coming to a town near you. And by near you, I mean it might mean a fun road trip, right? On September 2nd, we will be in Austin, Texas at ACL Live. Chuck knows what that is because of PBS. And then on September 30th, we will be in Atlanta, Georgia at the Symphony Hall. Chuck knows less about the symphony, but he does like the soundtrack to 1986's Top Gun.
So
how can you get tickets? Tickets go on sale to the general public on Wednesday, April 12th at 10 a.m. Central Time. That's a very special on Wednesdays We Podcast because it's our 500th episode. Now, can you get tickets earlier than that? Also, yes. BFOTS, best friends of the show, already have a pre-sale code, so they can buy tickets on Tuesday, April 4th at 10 a.m. Central. They get a whole week to think about it, buy their tickets, pick out the best seats, and then friends of the show and subscribers to our newsletter, Note for the Audio, they get a pre-sale code for Tuesday, April 11th, and then the general sale on April 12th. Now, in the past, most of our live shows have been general admission, you know, fight to the death for a seat so you can see Goofy on that stage, peeing on the stage. Louisville, we miss you. But these two shows are specific ticketed seats, so it does actually benefit you to take advantage of the pre-sale. Now, this event is 2 hours of absolute delightful idiocy, and it includes our entire team that we ship in from all over the country. You do not want to miss one of these nights. If you become a BFOTS, you get access to a year's worth of premium content, including the cinema side piece we released on Friday for Getting Sarah Marshall, as well as our 500th supersized AUA happening on Tuesday, April 18th. Also, if you don't like being a BFOTS, you can end your membership at any time. Learn more about the podcast live by clicking the link in the show notes or heading over to knoxandjamie.com/live.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Knox, you know that I don't need to be convinced to buy myself a Prezi, but all that talking about getting new sun tops for your pair eyewear glasses got me super excited to go get some for myself.
Oh yeah? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm so glad you asked because I cannot wait for our new merch to arrive so that I can wear the purple reflective sun top with my That'll Make Sense on Wednesday t-shirt. Erin, how great will those two look together?
Oh my gosh, so cute. Should I get one so we can match?
Well, I do feel like the lavender tortoise split sun top is more your style. No, right?
Now I want both of them, Jamie.
Well, did you know that Pair is super budget friendly, so you could get both? Their base frames start at just $60, and that includes the prescription. I love that they have simple to understand all-in-one pricing. You can even use your FSA, HSA, or easily get an insurance reimbursement to purchase the base frames. And the top frames start at just $25, and the sun top frames start at just $30. So you can easily get two without breaking the bank. They also always offer free shipping and a flexible 30-day return policy, so it's super low risk to give them a try. One pair infinite possibilities. Go to paireyewear.com and use code POP for 15% off your first pair and support the show by mentioning that the podcast sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's pair, P-A-I-R, eyewear.com, code POP.
Okay, Jamie, let's dig into this episode and discuss the topic. I'm so excited to talk about the idea of stolen lunch money. I feel like you've, in a recent episode, you made a really great comparison that's now escaping me about someone.
It was brilliant. I remember it detailed and it was brilliant.
Honestly, it was so brilliant. I just remembered, but I don't want to sully it by memory.
Well, listen, to be fair, I want to hold that very closely that you said that I was brilliant. And
words would just cheapen it. And I think we both know the exact reference that was made. So let's just leave it there. And I feel like the listeners will also know. But this is such a fascinating idea because I feel like it is everywhere we look in pop culture.
We've talked about it often when we do cinema side pieces, like when we're all often when we're talking about replacing a cast member, like for replacing, you know, Jason Segel and Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Like what would we have done? Because there are often, as we know, from many audition stories, from many actors, they talk about when you walk in, it's always the same group of people that look exactly like you and they're auditioning for the same role in it. It's a fight to the death. And I like the concept that if one sliding door opens differently, how does your career unfold? And I think I like the idea that there is somebody always in your corner that you're like friendly to on a red carpet, but you're like, I hate her, you know?
You know, and it makes a ton of sense that there are duplicative ideas. I think we've done an episode where we talked about ideas or movies or TV shows that are almost identical, but just a little different. And it's kind of a phenomenon of the Hollywood. But it only makes sense that that idea extends to the creatives and the actors and actresses that populate the margins and the projects in Hollywood. So I think this will be really interesting. Now, let's go ahead and lay the baseline down and define what do we mean when we say stolen lunch money? So this is just another way to discuss someone or something that has been supplanted. Okay, think of it like a giant game of King of the Hill, not the show, like the cartoon show, like the actual game where everyone's trying to be the top dog and different people will have it for different periods of time, but it's always kind of changing and shifting. Young people take it from old people take it from young. It's always this kind of amorphous thing. So it's people, ideas, things, all of this. Fundamentally, when we're talking about this, I feel pretty confident about they should have some kind of singular similarity, right?
Like, right.
I would love to try to make the case that John Hamm stole Jonah Hill's lunch money. I don't think I can, but I would love to try. But right. But there has to be something kind of similar binding them together, which makes it a little easier to talk about.
So, for context, I do want to note for the record, I have never played King of the Hill.
Okay.
In my whole life. Yeah. So I am going to give a reference for my play style as a child, which was if you were playing grocery store and you were fighting to be the store manager who then accuses other little girls of being thieves, because that's what my favorite job was. I would come in and be like, did you even pay for those Nutter Butters?
Yeah.
Get out of here. And then they'd have to go sit under the slide.
I feel like any psychiatrist listening are having a field day right now. They're just like, pause. Let me fill this whiteboard up.
Sidebar, did you know a listener who is a therapist literally told us on Twitter this week that someone brought up our show in their therapy session?
Wow. In a good or bad way.
Well, I don't ask follow-up questions because I don't like to know the answer.
I would love to have like an Ask a Therapist episode where we just kind of kick it to a therapist and be like, but not like serious stuff. Be like, what does it mean that this like blah, blah, blah happens or that I'm drawn to this kind of projects? Like, can you explain what that means? I'm sure it's like a very disrespectful use of their expertise, but I still want to do it.
I like that idea. Put it on the whiteboard.
So for me, like the best example of this is we'll go like old school, a little old school. I think of Tom Hanks and Michael Keaton. Okay. These are two actors who Tom Hanks was born in 1951. Michael Keaton was 1956. Both.
I love that means you do not know how old they are.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I just saw it like on their wiki and I was like, well, I'm not going to do the math. People can do the math. I'm not the math guy. They didn't come here for me to be the math guy, but both are defined by their likability. They're affable. They're kind of goofballs. They're handsome, but not in an approachable way, not like a typical movie star way. And when you look back at their career, they've kind of been doing that tango of who's king of the hill, who's stealing whose lunch money. Because you look, both hit around 1983. Tom Hanks's bosom buddies in Splash. Michael Keaton as Mr. Mom. Michael Keaton kind of draws the first blood because he gets Beetlejuice in 98. But ooh, then Hanks has Money Pit in 86, and he gets big and like not literally big, like the movie big, the Jamie's favorite movie, because it has. It features sex with a teenager, but it's kind of blameless because she didn't know he's a teenager. So Elizabeth Perkins is really blameless.
He wasn't a teenager on the outside.
Right. I'd love to see you argue that in a court of law, you know?
You always make me sound just slightly left of criminal. I don't know that I love that.
I make you sound like that, or I just repeat what you say.
You just
interesting.
Repeat what I say. That's,
you
know? Fine. That's fine. That's fine.
But so like Michael Keaton, it's really interesting because Michael Keaton gets Batman in 1989, right? So you're, yes, like, he's one. He's going to be the guy. But that turns out to be a disaster. And because of that disaster in 1989, Tom Hanks, he goes in the direction of Turner and Hooch and The Burbs in 1989. And Michael Keaton spirals. He really doesn't effectively work. I mean, he does jobs, but he gets Multiplicity in 96, which I don't know if you can call that like a good gig. And then it isn't until, you know, arguably 2014 Birdman that Michael Keaton rebounds. Meanwhile, Tom Hanks, 92, he's got League of Their Own, 93, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, 94, Forrest Gump, 95, Apollo 13, 95, Toy Story, 96, That Thing You Do, 98, Saving Private Ryan. You've got Mail in 1998, Castaway 2000. He can do this because Michael Keaton is radioactive, and it allows Tom Hanks to clean up and completely steal the lunch money. So that, I don't know if that effectively communicates what we're going for here, but it's when someone really takes it from someone else and gets all of the roles associated with that kind of personality type.
No, and that's exactly, and for Tom Hanks, it changes his financial future. It changes it's his entire life. And you have, when you're Michael Keaton, you just have to like sit in your living room and just be like, that son of a bee, he's,
yeah,
just stealing it all from me. But I'm so glad that Michael Keaton has, I mean, like, he's gonna be Batman again. Like, that's,
yeah,
so exciting, you know? And so,
yeah,
he's,
you know,
made it back.
And when you look at it, it's like, it isn't, you know, Birdman's 2014-ish, I think. And that coincides when Tom Hanks starts to become like boomer dad all-star, you know? So he's not really creatively going after it anymore. And what you mentioned, like, it allows Tom Hanks to accrue all the creative equity and financial equity and craft equity. Like, that 10-year span, you know, 8 to 10 years, that's what makes Tom Hanks who he is now.
Yes.
Because he's been drafting off that for over 2 decades now, right? Oh, he's done some good,
yeah,
stuff, obviously. But that run is unparalleled, and it's incredible. And it's what allows him to be the person he is today. Meanwhile, Michael Keaton is just now coming back from it. So I think it's a worthy and important conversation to kind of assess who is seizing the mantle and like taking over different corners of Hollywood. So, yeah, before we talk specifics though, Jamie, I wanted to ask you, like, personally, you know, have, yeah, you ever had your lunch money literally or metaphorically stolen?
Okay. So both. Literally, my mom packed my lunch. I didn't have my lunch money stolen, but my literal lunch, because my mom packed my lunch because I'm, you know, I only like PB&J. Mm-hmm. And green apples. So I was,
yeah,
very focused as a child. I didn't know I was hyper fixating on food until, like, now I do. I hyper fixate on food. And now I'm like, oh, I did that as a kid too. But Joe Green once stole my Alf lunchbox and I could not be consoled. I started wailing in the lunchroom. He hid it. He then lied about it. And then, of course, the lunch ladies later, when they popped up those tables and made them into their little
Yeah.
They found it and he got paddled.
Whoa, that's a paddleable offense?
Because, listen, it's Alabama. They were paddling. Well, and it came back because he tricked me. He's the guy that tricked me in second grade. I wanted to be the teacher's pet always to this,
yeah,
day. And he,
yeah,
said, hey, if you just yell real loud, cuff backwards, Miss Cummings,
yeah,
will freaking love you. And so I stood up and said the F word, the loudest anyone has ever said the F word at Bagley Elementary School. And I got paddled for that.
That is a that's a reasonable paddable offense. I know we talked about this before, but I don't remember if I've asked. Like, was there a moment where you were like, "Huh, cuff backwards"? I don't know. I'll do it though.
Listen,
or was it like I'm like FU San Diego Ron Burgundy style? It was just in head.
No,
out head.
I didn't even know what the F word was. I had,
yeah,
never even heard the F word. You know, I didn't even know. But I will say, in my late 30s, I did volunteer as a consultant for an organization once, and what I was doing for them, I'd hoped would turn into a full time job because I had left my job. And we were kind of doing the podcast on the side, and they didn't have anyone doing this job. I made it super clear in writing that I wanted the job. They even asked me to write the job description. And then they had the person that they hired emailed me and asked me for help in getting settled in her new position.
I was a firsthand witness to all of this. It was such an interesting choice by this.
That's fine. So yes. So I've been there. So, and it's tough, but you know what? I just was like, guess what? Not going to work at your church. I'm going to become a podcaster.
The lesson there is that churches that make ministry, like their whole mindset, they think even like when you volunteer your time and effort and expertise that that's ministry too. Like everything's ministry.
And the irony is they treat that church like a business. And it's like, guys, I was good for the business. But because I didn't get that job, I could, you know, force your hand and be like, we're going to make this work.
That's right. You get to talk about the sexual aspects of Big, the Tom Hanks movie.
Thank you.
You know,
exactly.
You wouldn't have had that opportunity.
God is honored in all we do.
That's right. I had my lunch money stolen when I was a rising eighth grader, turning into a freshman. I was changing schools and, you know, played football. Part of the reason I was changing was to play sports there. And I played quarterback in middle school. And I was decent. You know, we were primarily a running team. So all I had to do was hand the ball off on the right side. But I was good enough that I expected to start. And everyone I talked to, they were like, oh, man, the guy we have is terrible. He's just the worst. You're going to start. And like, you might make him quit. You're so good. You're so much better than him. And I was like, this is great. I'm so excited for summer practice. So I show up to summer practice. And what I see instead, his name was Penn. Penn Garvik, and he was the Greek god of the triple option. He had hit a growth spurt, so I don't know what he was, but he was like 6'6". It was like watching Tim Tebow, but like with prettier skin, play quarterback.
Wow.
And I was like, my God, like what has happened here? Was this a joke? Is this like my version of hazing? So, you know, I backed him up for a couple weeks and then changed positions because I was like, there's no future here.
Listen, that's tough because on paper, if you were saying who's going to be quarterback, is it a guy named Knox or a guy named Penn? I'm going to be like Sophie's Choice. Those are both quarterback names.
They're good quarterback names. Lovely guy too. Wonderful guy. Just a great teammate. But just much better quarterback than I was. So it was tough. You know, it was tough. But I was like, hey, this is what it is. You know, I felt like Michael Keaton in the mid 90s. You know, it's like okay,
that's fair. You came back.
Maybe later.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So Knox, you know that I don't need to be convinced to buy myself a Prezi, but all that talking about getting new sun tops for your pair eyewear glasses got me super excited to go get some for myself.
Oh yeah? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm so glad you asked because I cannot wait for our new merch to arrive so that I can wear the purple reflective sun top with my That'll Make Sense on Wednesday t-shirt. Erin, how great will those two look together?
Oh my gosh, so cute. Should I get one so we can match?
Well, I do feel like the lavender tortoise split sun top is more your style. No, right?
Now I want both of them, Jamie.
Well, did you know that Pair is super budget friendly, so you could get both? Their base frames start at just $60, and that includes the prescription. I love that they have simple to understand all-in-one pricing. You can even use your FSA, HSA, or easily get an insurance reimbursement to purchase the base frames. And the top frames start at just $25, and the sun top frames start at just $30. So you can easily get two without breaking the bank. They also always offer free shipping and a flexible 30-day return policy, so it's super low risk to give them a try. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to paireyewear.com and use code POP for 15% off your first pair and support the show by mentioning that the podcast sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's pair, P-A-I-R, eyewear.com, code POP.
Have you ever heard a song on the radio and felt like it was written about you? That's why I'm so excited to share about our new sponsor, Songfinch. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. Whether your song is for Mother's Day, Father's Day, an upcoming graduation or wedding, or just to show a loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in a top Songfinch artist. I'm on their website right now, and I'm about to create my very first song. They've made it so easy. When you go to songfinch.com/podcast, all you have to do is click the big orange button that says start your song. In order to make the songs entirely original and personalized, they ask questions like, who are you creating this song for, and what's your inspiration? You get to pick the artist who creates the song for you, or you can have Songfinch help you by selecting between genres, vocal styles, vibe, and tempo. You can get as detailed and personalized as you'd like, but the process couldn't be easier for a songwriting novice like myself. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anytime, anywhere. Go to songfinch.com/podcast and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, our URL is songfinch.com/podcast. Don't forget to share your song with us too, songfinch.com/podcast. This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Aura Frames. It's Knox here with your annual reminder that Mother's Day is just around the corner. This year, let's think outside the box a little bit, guys. Forget sweaters, candles, or the dreaded bathrobe. They're all so predictable and boring. That's why this year I'm recommending you get an Aura Frame. It's the perfect gift to mix things up and give a gift that shows some real thoughtfulness and is guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages. We actually have one of these in our house right now, and we absolutely love it. It only takes about 2 minutes to set up, and it was super easy. Between all the kids, I was a little worried we'd run out of room, but it has free unlimited storage for photos and videos, and you can invite as many people as you want to contribute to the frame. Now that the kids are a little older, we've added them as contributors to the frame, and it's been really fun to see a few of their photos pop up from events they attend without us. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's Aura, A-U-R-A, frames.com. Use code podcast at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, so we've laid the baseline. We've given a personal example. Let's talk about some maybe pop cultural or Hollywood examples of stolen lunch monies.
Okay, my first example out of the gate is actually two actresses that I believe formed a transatlantic alliance to steal all of another actress's money. They're all the same age. They're all, and when I name them, you're going to be like, oh yeah, I can see. So first up, we have Zendaya, singer, actress, lover of Tom Holland, right? Yeah. She got her big break in 2009 when she was a featured performer in the Kids Bop music video for Hot and Cold by Katy Perry.
Okay.
Kids Bop 15, if you're wanting to look it up. Okay. Now, she ends up becoming a Disney star, right? Shake It Up, Casey Undercover. Guys, don't ever forget, Zendaya was on Dancing with the Stars and could not beat Kelly Pickler. Could not beat Kelly Pickler. Okay.
Wow.
And so she forms an alliance with the British Flo Pugh, actress, also singer, and former lover of Zach Braff, right?
Right.
She also gets her acting start as a teenager in supporting roles. And because she's Caucasian and British, she doesn't have to be on Disney, right? Mm. So she comes in, and I think they come together and they're like, listen, we have a nemesis. Let's form this beautiful alliance. I'll let you have some things. You can let me have some things, but we'll never let Hailee Steinfeld have anything ever again. Okay?
Yeah.
Because think about it. Hailee Steinfeld, for those who don't know, she has a much better start than the two of them. There's no Kids Bop in her history. At 13, she's in True Grit and gets an Oscar nomination.
And she's legit great in it.
She's so good. She keeps working, but here's the problem. Her first love was music, unfortunately, which leads her to say yes to projects like Pitch Perfect 2.
Oh, man.
The least of all the Pitch Perfects, okay?
That was a big misstep.
She opens for Katy Perry on tour, Meghan Trainor, Charlie Puth, but there's an outlier, and there is a random outlier of The Edge of 17, which she is also really great in. It was a green light of ours. We love that. And don't get me wrong, you might be like, but Jamie, she's playing Kate Bishop. Do you know why she's playing Kate Bishop? Because Zendaya and Flo Pugh were already in the MCU and they couldn't steal it from her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And listen, all this time right now, Flo Pugh and Zendaya are on the set of Dune 2, solidifying their power plays for the next 40 years. And I love Hailee Steinfeld, but I think her desire to be like, I want to sing a pop song about masturbation. And it'd be a hit. And it is. It is a bop. But I think her focus on music got her distracted from the thing that, like, because listen, Zendaya has one of my favorite, like, Replay is a song I can literally replay all the time. I love that song. But she was like, no. If I sing, it's only going to be in service to a movie. So I'm going to be in The Greatest Showman. You know, because I think about every role that the two of them have had. And you absolutely, for the most part, could put Hailee Steinfeld in that mix and be like, yeah, she could have been in Midsommar. Yeah, she could have been MJ. Like, you could put her in a bunch of spots, but it's like they walled up around themselves and were like, no, you cannot come here.
You're exactly right. And I think it's I don't even know that it was like a dumb move. It was a move of not knowing any better, because people, like, there's a difference between pursuing your creative passions versus like the things you got to do to get to where you want to be. Like Zendaya blowing Bella Thorne off the screen on Disney yes. Channel shows, like, that's just what you got. That's just like the price to pay, like, to get to where you want to get. But Hailee Steinfeld, I felt like she had success so early that she could dabble in her hobbies. And while she dabbled, she never established that foothold, that like Flo Pugh, like the reputation of Zendaya Flo Pugh, where now if Flo Pugh wanted to do like a hip hop album, I'd be like, that's a weird move, but I will probably listen to that.
Like,
you know?
Will I listen to Zendaya do soft jazz? Yes, I will.
Sure.
I think I will.
And I didn't like, so, when you mentioned Hawkeye, the TV series on Disney Plus,
yeah,
obviously Hailee Steinfeld's in that with Flo Pugh. Or there's a couple episodes where they're together. When they show up together, it feels like Flo Pugh is 10 years older than her. And they were both born in 1996.
They would say all three of them are the same age.
That is stunning to me. Because, yeah. And I know Hailee Steinfeld reads younger, and that role is meant to be a little younger. And Flo Pugh is meant to be a little older. But still, it just feels like in terms of career, I think that's a great call, because I think those other two are light years ahead of her.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one. This is a bit of a reach, but I feel like it functions as okay. What we're going for here. Okay. And I have Simba has been market corrected by Rocket Raccoon. Okay.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
Right. So you know them from The Lion King, obviously, and Guardians of the Galaxy. How they overlap is both occupy that space of they're orphaned animals who can speak. They don't handle emotions well, and they mostly hang out with misfits. Okay. Simba hangs out with a bossy marsupial and a flatulent hog, and Rocket Raccoon hangs out with a noble tree, a douchebag Star-Lord, and a meathead blue guy. Both were failed by their guardians, right? Rocket was a normal raccoon that was genetically engineered into becoming a caretaker that focused on weapons. And that's a big fail if you spent any time around raccoons. That is not a job you can trust them with. You
no,
know?
No, exactly.
And Simba was the sole heir to the entire Circle of Life. Meanwhile, that's a big fail, because Pride Rock didn't really have a tight contingency succession plan of like, look, if Mufasa has a stroke or whatever, we do need to like have a backup plan. The anyone but Scar, you know, procession plan
right,
here.
Right.
And they fail in that respect. And because like if I was Mufasa, you know, or even the bird like Zazu, who like I think he was on it, you know, he was very like, we've got, you know, we have a schedule for a reason. We should be on time.
Yes.
Light touches, doesn't touch. Like, let's just abide by the rules here. And if I'm him, I would be like, Scar needs to be a diplomat to the red butt monkeys or like the silverback gorillas. He does not need to be here with us, okay? Because yeah. He's up to trouble. You know he is. He just always is.
And listen, Rocket Raccoon did that, took that, stole that money from Simba, and he didn't even need Bucky's arm. Do you know what I mean? He didn't even need it. He was like, I got... And listen, I think in the background, you have Stitch just looking on, going,
yeah.
I could have been a contender. But
oh, you think Stitch should have gotten in this with Simba and like mixed it up with Rocket Raccoon?
Right?
Stitch never had the real estate. They never let Stitch cook. You know, Stitch was in a weird Disney World ride where like you just sit in a room and it's like a comedy club. And at some point he farts and you smell it. I'm not making this up. This is a legit
that's
story.
That's not real.
And it's just.
What part of Epcot is that in?
You guys, there's cool ways to spend 10 grand and there are not cool ways. And sniffing Stitch's farts is not a cool way to spend 10 grand. I will tell you that right now. But so Rocket, I think Rocket steals lunch money because he asserts that he's more than the tragedy that originated him, you know? And I think he's actually textured and likable and he has skills. That's the important part. Simba is defined by that tragedy. He is defined by getting his dad killed. He has no skills and he does nothing. Because as a reminder, Simba gets his father killed and then leaves, joins like a nomad folk band with only one good song, Kuna Matata. And then he comes back reluctantly only because he got tricked into sex. He got tricked into lion sex because there's an Elton John song playing and he had sex. And he was like, I guess I should follow her back. And then do you remember
isn't that what happened to Hanson, the band?
Hanson, the band?
Yeah, they went one good hit, got tricked into sex.
Who they get tricked into sex with?
Well, no, I think it's like, I think one of them's in a cult now, allegedly. Spin zone.
Maybe they tricked a lot of people into sex, you know, with them.
Well,
what?
Roadies.
It's a weird arousal I'm feeling right now, but I guess I'll see it through. But so he gets back and like he has to fight Scar And Simba's, I guess, like 18, and Scar's like 60 at this point, which is like a million in line years. And he still almost beats him. And that's just, I don't know. I don't know why we like, it would be like me fighting Dick Van Dyke right now and losing, and almost losing, you know? Listen, there's just no reason that should happen.
Weapons or fists, I feel like he's always packing heat. Do you know what I mean? Both I will say, figuratively, you know, and like literally.
Like he got in a car wreck or something like last week, and they keep showing pictures of him and like his status, and they keep showing increasingly more unhinged pictures of him. He looks like the monkey at the zoo that they've dressed up for playtime.
He is 97.
Can we shave the chin strap beard or just find like a cool picture? Why are we showing the crazy pictures of Dickie Van D? It's ridiculous. So I feel very confident, and I feel like this next Guardians 3 is really going to assert, like, Rocket Raccoon's actually the guy, because I think Rocket's going to die.
No, and I think you make a good point. When we look back at some careers, like a Simba, you just go, God, is he the least likable of everybody in that movie? I think he might be.
He would be like if Kendall Roy took over Waystar Royko. It would be like, just good. He killed somebody. You know,
he would definitely have a 40th birthday party where he brings, quote, a rapper. You know what I mean? He would absolutely do that.
Yeah, he would. Okay, who else you got?
My next choice is, this is a late lunch money theft, because what happens a lot of times in Hollywood is that two roads diverge in a wood in the Kidz Bop years, in the Disney years, in the early 20s. But I actually think this is something that is in real time happening right now. And that is, and this is even sadder because it's happening between good friends. And that is Pedro Pascal is stealing the lunch money of one Oscar Isaac.
Oh, man. I was searching my head of like, who is she about to say? But you're exactly right.
Listen, and Pedro Pascal and Oscar Isaac, they meet in 2005. They both worked on an off-Broadway play in 2005 called The Beauty of the Father. Okay. And Pedro Pascal went to NYU. Oscar Isaac went to Juilliard. So there's already like a built-in rivalry. But they're like, look at us. There are not many roles for guys like us. So let's just support each other. And they do. And Pedro was acting steadily on TV, mostly on this. His TV IMDb is a cluster of crime procedurals. He's on CSI, Without a Trace, Law & Order OG, Law & Order SVU, Law and Order Criminal Intent twice as two different characters. Like, his first big break comes in 2014 at age 39. Truly, like, he is a late in life bloomer in Hollywood. And, you know, funny, people will say, oh, Game of Thrones. Yes, of course, he's so hot in Game of Thrones. I wish he still had that robe and would just wear it sometimes on Instagram. Yeah. But I actually fell for him on The Mentalist the same year, because I was the one person watching The Mentalist on
big crossover audience there. Big Venn diagram. Hey, credit to you for not talking about his big spear in Game of Thrones and the way he flung that thing around. So credit to you for not sexualizing that.
Oh, my God. Good job. Okay. So, and then, of course, he goes, hey, listen, he is the best part of Narcos. I started rewatching it just as a revisit. I'm like, oh, let's go back and see Pedro, because he's very hot in that. And then, of course, he gets The Mandalorian. He actually is the only thing I thought that made the Book of Boba Fett worth it.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah. And then, of course, he plays Joel Miller in The Last of Us. Now, Oscar Isaac has a much bigger approach to the screen, and he kind of lands with a splash, right? Because he gets to be in, he gets to be Joseph in the Nativity Story. Remember that movie? Like, did you remember that he was Joseph?
I did not know that.
Yes. Okay. But what he really does is he ends up being inside Llewyn Davis, 2013. It gets him a Golden Globe nomination. And then from there, it's just Ex Machina. It's X-Men. It's, he gets to be Poe Dameron, which is the best way to be in a Star Wars trilogy, is to be kind of the supporting character, the Han Solo kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And then Annihilation, Dune. Weirdly, The Card Counter, which I liked. I think we talked about, like, I liked The Card Counter.
Yeah.
And then he was in Moon Knight, Your Green Light. And but here's the thing. If you look now, Pedro owns so many things. All of the real estate is owned by him. He's like, oh, am I lovable with a puppet? Yes. Am I lovable with a tiny Bella Ramsey? Yep. Like, am I fun to watch eat boned meat on Hot Ones? Yes. He owns TikTok. He has four movies coming out. He has a movie coming out with Willem Dafoe, David Harbour, Ben Mendelsohn, and Walter Goggins. And then Oscar is dead in Dune. Spoiler. He was great in Moon Knight. I like really loved him in that. But he even said, well, Marvel has not asked me to do anything else. So
yeah,
that's it for that. And so, I mean, and Oscar Isaac has stuff coming up and he has a lovely life. But I think Pedro Pascal was just like, I'm going to see so hard on this, and I'm going to do every bit of press, because Oscar Isaac has famously said, like, he gets tired of press, and Pedro Pascal, he stops at every corner. He talks to every person. And I think that's the benefit of coming to that kind of success later in life, that you're willing, you're not weathered by all the things that Hollywood requires of you. You're just like, I'm happy to be here because I didn't think I would be here. And I'm just happy to be working. And if you like me, like, that's amazing. And I'll work every red carpet. I'll go to the Oscars and present. I'll show up to everything, but not in a way that you get tired of me, but in a way that you're like, here's another clip that you can put in an edit on TikTok. How you like it? How you like it?
Yeah, that perspective is invaluable. And I think it feels like they are, I'll be curious to watch them, you know, because obviously Oscar Isaac had his, not that he's like done now, but where he was kind of grabbing everything, right? Where he had the lunch money. And then Pedro Pascal has it now. And so now they're on equal footing. I'm interested to see where it goes from here, because I think you could talk me into Pedro Pascal's more everyman, more approachable, more realistic. And Oscar Isaac feels more polished, more almost like when you want some distance with your movie star, it's Oscar Isaac. But when you want some, like, you know, it's like a Tesla versus a Ford, you know?
Yeah.
I know Pedro Pascal. I don't really know the Tesla guy. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I'll be interested to see what direction they go in and who takes it back.
You know, if I was at the Hudson News at the airport and I saw Oscar Isaac, I would not even get close to him. But if I saw Pedro Pascal, I would walk up to the back of him and take a big whiff. I'd just be like, what do you smell like? You know, I would just, and I would feel like if he turned around, I'd be like, hi. And it would be not weird. He'd be like,
did you
smell me?
He would engage.
Yeah. And then we'd make out, like, and it'd be fine. And they'd ask us to leave that Hudson News, and it'd be fine.
He's like, do you want to know what Baby Yoda smells like? Because I smell him, you know? And it would just be a lovely conversation.
It would be wonderful.
Meanwhile, Oscar Isaac's sniffing your armpit, and you're like, hey, I'm not Jessica Chastain. We don't do that here.
You know what's so funny? Like, I look back on that red carpet with Jessica Chastain, and I do look back at that and go, that was a mistake.
Yeah,
you're married. He's married. They're both married. And I get that she was like, please don't smell. Like, because I don't think she was into it either. She was like, ha, ha, ha. Mm. And I think he just thought, I'll be your Latin lover. And it was like, no.
We'll just like play it out and see. Sometimes you just want to have that rehearsed. And here's, like, I'll just, like, spicy take. I just think sniffing people in public, it's not a good move. It's not a smart move. You know, soft putting.
You've got to be casual about it. You can't sniff someone's armpit in front of a row of photographers.
No, if you theatrically sniff someone, you're not gonna, it's no good vibes. All bad vibes.
All bad vibes
in that situation. Okay, another one I had was, this one was interesting. Like, low stakes interesting, okay?
Okay.
It's John Krasinski versus Zachary Levi, okay?
Ooh.
I think this is, again, low stakes. This is not, like, defining franchises or anything, but I think there is a, you know, sometimes if you, and I know you're a big fan of, like, boxing matches and MMA fights, you know?
Oh, my gosh, every night, watch them,
some
like
of those
clockwork.
Opening fights, like, sometimes they're the most savage, you know? No one's really paying attention. They're not getting any attention, but they are the most savage fights. They're much more savage than, like, the main event. That's kind of what I feel like this is, just a really, like, boots to the ground, tooth and nail kind of fight. You know them from, obviously, Zachary Levi was in Chuck and was Flynn Rider in Tangled, most recently in Shazam. John Krasinski is Jim from The Office, Jack Ryan on Amazon. And I'm trying to think about this on the run. He's one J name short of the white guy J name bingo, because he's Jim from The Office, Jack Ryan in the Jack Ryan stuff. And I think he just needs a Jeff. He needs a Jeff. So he needs to be like the Jeff Chaucer biopic or the Jeff Foxworthy biopic. And he's got, like, the whole bingo that he can sound, but just very approachable, kind of tall, gangly white guys.
Yes.
I think,
you know,
they,
he was Jack. In, but that's still Jack. No,
yeah,
he was Jack in 13 Hours, you know, the movie that I weirdly am obsessed with.
Yeah, yeah, you are. But I mean, but okay, and that's part of it. I'm glad you brought that up, because we'll come back to that. And I think that's a crucial difference between the two. They, I think, you know, beyond being kind of similar to that Keaton Hanks kind of platonically handsome, I think they both, like, are modern catnip to white women who were vain about, like, prioritizing personality over physicality, you know? Like, these are the people that they really default to.
Are you coming for our jugulars today?
No.
How dare you?
They're just, they built their own personality about, like, how they don't care about muscles and six packs. They care about, like, you know, like, smirks and...
Listen,
you know,
I'm taking it back for white women everywhere. I care about muscles and I care about size of all things.
Listen, we contain multitudes. It's okay.
That's right.
Everybody can have their own thing. Where do we see, like, the lunch money battle? I think, you know, Zachary Levi, he has Chuck in 2000. 2007, 2012. It's critically acclaimed, has a bit of a cult following. It's a deal. It's not a big deal, but it is a deal.
I did love Chuck. I did.
Yeah, it was solid. He parlays this into Tangled and a bit kind of side door into Thor, which I think is probably the fatal flaw. You know, the Chekhov's flaw we'll come back to. He's also Miss Maisel, and he gets Shazam, which is secretly like was a really good movie and kind of a surprise on the DC side. John Krasinski, he is The Office, obviously. He parlays this into Aloha, which sucks. Then he goes 13 Hours. Then he goes A Quiet Place. Then he goes Jack Ryan. And then he does, like, for 8 episodes back in the pandemic, Some Good News. Do you remember that? Like, he did Some Good News.
Oh, yeah.
And he sold
it. Yes.
You know what happened to Some Good News?
It's nothing. Not anywhere, right?
They didn't do anything with it. You know
he
why?
He just made cash.
There's no money in positivity. There's no money in good news. No one wants that.
No, we want
to. So remember that when you're watching cable news or scrolling social media, there's no incentive to share good news. It's only bad news.
Nobody's clicking on the cat who saved the baby. They're clicking on the cat that killed the baby.
Well, cats don't save babies. That's a lie. You know, like they wouldn't do that. They would kill a baby though. So why has John Krasinski taken a lot of money from Zachary Levi? Because I think Zachary Levi was probably poised to have the kind of good guy, attractive, I don't want to say like quirky, kind of fun dude, counter beta male kind of role to all like the big beefy dudes. I think he was poised to have that. I think the obvious answer is The Office was so much of a bigger deal than Chuck, just so much, you know, had double the episodes. It was more fresh in our minds. But I think more than anything, John Krasinski doesn't get tangled up in that franchise stuff, whereas Zachary Levi gets tangled up in Thor, and not good Thor. It's bad Thor, and he's not even like point of reference. He's just like, is that Zachary Levi? Is that Idris Elba? I don't know. We didn't get to spend time with either of them, you know?
That's right, because you do think, like, and he kicks it really early on in a later Thor, and you're like, why did you even agree to this? Maybe, I mean, I guess he thought, if I just say yes to this small thing, that I'll become a bigger thing in the MCU, which, again, why are they not going to let a scientist then become The Flash, like
it's
that's not
promotion
and
style.
I know that's not MCU. Stuck. Just I ignore all my crossover. It doesn't matter.
That's at Jamie Golden on social media.
It,
you can educate her on how the hierarchies work. But I think you mentioned 13 Hours. I think, you know, John Krasinski, I saw he auditioned for Captain America, which is utterly hilarious, honestly, versus where they landed with Chris Evans. And you know, he's bizarre Reed Richards in the Doctor Strange sequel. But he's not tied to any kind of franchise besides like A Quiet Place, but that's original. But I think what he did, the key thing that separated them and differentiated them was John Krasinski went from Jim on The Office to I'm a physical guy. I got muscles.
Yeah.
I go bang, bang, shoot, shoot, punch,
right.
punch.
I eat
you know,
chicken.
I do 13 Hours. I do Jack Ryan. I'm smart. I'm espionage adjacent, and I can punch you in the face. And Zachary Levi never did that. He never defined himself. I think the defining aspect of Zachary Levi is I'm tall like a tree monologue on Ms. Maisel, which is 100% true, incredible and funny, but that's all he is, right? So he never really carved out a place for himself beyond like Shazam, and that's not done well. So I think this is one, you know, if we're keeping tabs on all these, this is one of those that's tipped, and I don't know that it can tip backwards towards Zachary Levi.
No, I don't think it can. And I think one of the key factors, weirdly, is, you know, Zachary Levi has been married once for less than 6 months. And then there was no mention of that ever again.
Right.
Like, why did they break up? What's happened to why would you divorce after 6 months? That seems really sketchy. And then, of course, John Krasinski, he marries up in maybe one of the most fantastical ways in history. When his hair was still brushed forward, he managed to snag Emily Blunt. Like, and I think she elevated everything, too. She was like, we're going to be better. Like, we're going to be more interesting and sexier than anyone ever anticipated. And so
it's viability. It's 100% viability. And a lot of these, what we're talking about is just the residue of viability. It gets you one extra role, gets you one extra shot, one extra lottery ticket. And that's all it takes to steal the lunch money. So I think that's a great point.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
it. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Jamie, do you have one more?
I have one more funny? Okay. More, and it is my favorite because I like how, and sometimes, like in the story earlier, you know, my lunch money being stolen ended up opening up another door that sent me down a different path. But let me tell you about these two. Amanda Seyfried, she starts as a teen on soap operas. She's on Veronica Mars. She's on Big Love. You know her from Mamma Mia, Dear John, Les Mis, Mank, The Dropout, right? Has this crazy career. And the reason she has this crazy career is because out of the gate, she steals the lunch money from Blake Lively. Mm. And it is on the movie Mean Girls. It comes down to Amanda and Blake for the role of, weirdly, Amanda thought she was getting the job of Regina. She flew in. She was like, I was auditioning for Regina the whole time. So Lindsay Lohan's already been cast, right? She's Katie. You've got Gretchen Wieners already, Lacey Charbet. And then they bring in Amanda to do the role of Regina, and they bring in Blake to do Karen. And the producers, the casting director was like, this is it. This is the group. This is the group. And then Lorne Michaels watches back the tape, and he's like, no. Like, Amanda Seyfried is Karen. Like, I promise you. She wow. can play Karen better than she can play Regina, and Blake Lively is not good. Not
See, okay. If it's me, I think Blake Lively's too hot to be the marginalized friend.
Well, you have to remember, this is before, guys, just go back and watch the first Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, and you'll see Blake Lively's original face, because it is not the same face she has now, which if you can make your face better with a couple of tweaks, I am very pro, whatever, sure. But that's a different nosed person than we know today.
I'm not saying this from my perspective. I'm just generally representing the male perspective. That's still right. good to go. Still, it was that's still right. A-OK thumbs up. Not me. Again, that's not my right. perspective. I'm just saying I've heard my sources tell me,
so,
basically.
Well, so Blake Lively gets to be the soccer player in Traveling Pants, and then she gets Traveling Pants 2, and then she gets Gossip Girl, which, again, that's when she gets her new nose. She gets Gossip Girl. She's stunning, sure. right? But because of the Mean Girls, Amanda gets 9 Lives, which It's a pretty good film, but it's a huge ensemble. It gets a lot of press. It gets a lot of attention, which then means she gets Mamma Mia. And wow. that leads to Dear John, which isn't a great film, but in terms of Nicholas Sparks, people were watching every Nicholas Sparks adaptation at that point.
Yeah, it's that notebook effect.
That's right. And she gets Dear John, which gets her Les Mis, okay? But Blake's bad choices of just doing the first one and the second one of the pants, right?
Yeah.
And staying on a TV show that's good, but not, if you watch it back, everybody's going to remember Gossip Girl as being amazing. But I've watched a season back and I'm like, oh, this does not hold up. Like, Chuck Bass is still great, but the rest of y'all are a situation. But Blake leads her to Green Hornet, a horrific film, genuinely horrific film. But who does she meet on that set?
She does get married.
She meets Ryan Reynolds. They go on a double date with other people. They were not on a double date together. They realize at the table how much they like each other and not their dates. They fall in love. And then they have 4 children in 8 years.
A lot of kids in a short amount of time.
That's the thing. And so she makes a decision as an actress. And so it's not only Amanda stole her lunch money, but also her children stole her lunch money. Do you know what I mean? Because because the difference too is Amanda Seyfried. Do you know who Amanda Seyfried's married to? You do.
I do. I don't.
Thomas Sadowski from Newsroom.
Oh, for real?
Yes. And they have 2 children. But here's the benefit. When Blake Lively marries Ryan Reynolds, she's making a decision about her career, which is, I want to have a lot of babies with this man, and they are going to be the hottest babies, and they'll all be featured in Taylor Swift songs at some point in their lives, which is pretty, pretty fantastic. But the problem is, he's not going to stop his career. He is a prolific
guy.
Prolific guy. Gonna make and wants to buy he wants to buy a football team. You know, like he wants to do all these things. And what happens to Amanda Seyfried is she marries Thomas Sadowski, who's like, I don't have to work. I'll be a stay-at-home dad. Like, I'll work sometimes.
He's like, I'll be the cucked guy in the Reese Witherspoon, Cheryl Strayed movie. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, you know, that sounds like amazing. Check. Like, you go be you and you go be hugely successful. And that actually enables her to, because listen, Blake Lively recently was cast in It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover, a beloved book, right? Which every reader of It Ends With Us thought was the worst casting ever. Amanda Seyfried didn't even audition for that because she went, I'm not 23. But Blake Lively was like, I can be 23. Do you need me to be 23?
Wow.
Like, I can do it. So that doesn't make sense. Amanda, instead, she's like, what author could I form a partnership with? Well, she's going to be in the next movie, co-written by Taylor Jenkins Reid, called My Ex-Friend's Wedding, co-written with Kay Cannon, co-starring Ariana DeBose, Chloe Fineman, and Megan Stalter. So these two women who are the same age, they're 37, they're in their late 30s. What has happened is it's really Amanda chose to marry someone less hot and less talented. Mm. So it ended up being in her favor in terms of her own career.
Yeah. You got the hot guy who just keeps selling stuff for billions of dollars to other people, or you have the stable career. You can't have both, I guess.
You can't have both.
You know, I asked ChatGPT while you're talking. I was like, what are Blake Lively's best movies? Okay.
And A Simple Favor.
Well, that's on the list. That is on. Actually, that's on the list. And this is artificial intelligence. They have no bias, you know? They're not like, I'm a huge Gossip Girl fan, so I'm going to like overexpose this.
Okay.
ChatGPT says, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, number one. The Town, number two. Yeah, those are both good.
She doesn't make The Town great.
She's effective in The Town.
Okay.
A Simple Favor. There you go. That's legit great. She's great in it too. The Shallows.
The Shallows is a great film.
The Private Lives of Pippa Lee. Now you lost me. You did lose me.
ChatGPT, you're losing. And listen, A Simple Favor is a great film that was made over 5 years ago. That's the last good film that she's only made one other film. Listen, she's going to be in a film. You know what her thing is? She's like, I want to be a person that a weird thing has happened to.
Yeah.
And then there's a murder. That's like the Age of Adeline, the one where she can't see, the one where she can't hear.
Yeah.
And now she's going
to
be
one where she gets like the short black haircut and she wants to kill people with Jude Law or against Jude Law. That's fun.
I don't know why she keeps doing these weird like outlier films, because you know why she's doing them? Because she's like, I've got 40 days. That's how long baby Ryan has given me to be away from the house is 40 days. So whatever we can make in 40 days, we have to make that film.
I don't know if I'm biased here, but I feel like she is a better actress than Amanda Seyfried. But I feel like Amanda Seyfried has made smarter decisions.
And listen, sometimes that's all it is. Like sometimes it's not about, because I think for us at the podcast, for a long time, we didn't take breaks and people really would get mad, like colleagues and peers would get mad at us for not taking breaks. And now we do, but we're really intentional about it. And we really didn't do it until we had staff. But I always go back to, it wasn't that we were necessarily always more talented than other peers. It was just that we were willing to work genuinely as hard as we had to.
Yeah.
For years to get it started. We were willing to work nights, work weekends. Like, we were willing to make all kinds of content all the time. And I think sometimes that is what it is. It's not about always your talent. It's always like, guy, rise, ask. Is it talent or is it luck? And it's like, sometimes it's hard. It's just showing up.
Yeah. And sometimes relentlessness can hedge against some other deficiencies.
That's
you know?
That's right.
Okay. My last one is, this is a little bit of a thinker, but I feel like there's some really interesting data here. So I beg the court's indulgence. This is interesting black leading male actors have stolen the lunch money of interesting white leading male actors.
Oh, okay.
Now here's what I'm saying. Like, here's who I am picturing and thinking of when I say that. Okay. You've got Winston Duke, Michael B. Jordan, Lakey Stanfield, Daniel Kaluuya, Brian Tyree Henry, Reggie John Page, Stephen James, Donald Glover, Tyler James Williams, Jonathan Majors, Wolf, John David Washington, John Boyega, Aldous Hodge, John David Washington. There's many more.
God, but that's such a good list.
It's a great list, isn't it?
We couldn't have even made a list like that in the aughts.
No, you couldn't. No, you couldn't. Yeah. And if I said, well, let's put together a list that is competitive with that from leading white actors, you'd be hard-pressed to do that.
Jesse Plemons. That's all I can think of.
That is, he's good, but is he good enough to beat all those other guys?
No, he's not. So. No, he's not.
Now, why is this the case? What's the theory here? So for me, I think the ascendance of superhero movies and super franchise IP, you know, that pre-existing stuff that's highly recognizable, because that has ascended and escalated, and because, you know, Marvel movies are predominantly white, so all those roles have been populated by white actors, and I would also say Marvel movies are predominantly staffed by white decision makers, okay? Same for Star Wars, same for DC. You know, there are some exceptions, obviously, but largely, broadly speaking, I think that's true. So we've got all these franchise IP, long contract legs lifted on white actors and white creatives, okay? And even more, I think what all these IP and these movies and these IP properties are prioritizing isn't like great acting. It's just, do you have the leading man look, okay?
Yes.
Do you have strong chin, strong jawline? Do you have abs? Do you have a handsome face? Do you have a lot of symmetry?
Is your name Chris? Good,
right.
Let's go.
They're not like, did you graduate from Juilliard? Are you like, can you cry on cue? Just one crocodile tear? They don't care about that. It's just like, do you hot? Here's your job, okay? Now, Adam Driver is Kylo Ren's the exception here, but it proves the rule. So why is this important? Well, I think because of this, it leads to a vacuum that needs to be filled in the area of non-superhero, non-super franchise IP during a content boom, right? We have the streaming wars. Everyone's looking for movies. Everyone's looking for TV shows. Everyone's looking for content. And we have all these white people committed to Star Wars Infinity or right. Guardians of the Galaxy 15. So it's a classic opportunity of supply and demand, right? Big supply of talented black actors and creatives matched with a huge demand of content. It doesn't explain why interesting lead black actors have stolen the lunch money of interesting lead white actors, though, until you think about how, because this movie landscape and the TV landscape has tilted adversely towards superhero, super franchise IP model, it's choked out this middle class, low budget territory where typically a lot of the untraditional white leading guy types have thrived and developed their craft. Okay, like maybe they didn't start out like, I'm definitely gonna be a leading guy, but they got some movies under their belts where they could be positioned for that. So I'm thinking of like Ethan Hawke, okay, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Michael Cera, Jack Black, Adam Sandler, Paul Giamatti, all these kind of guys, you wouldn't look at them and think they can lead something. But because we get reps with them in indie stuff or like off-center stuff, now they've got some like commercial viability with us. So because this, you know, part of like the creative content ecosystem's collapsed, we really have no middle class of interesting white dudes. All of the buff leading man white dude types are committed. And not only are they committed, they're committed, they're spoken for, and they are doing this stuff that artistically sucks, right?
Right.
It's dialogue that sucks in service to a story that sucks, not like as a commentary on comic books, but it's just not highbrow stuff, right? And, you know, I think the unintended consequence of that is you've got like a guy, I don't know, like Chris Evans. I think he probably in a vacuum could be a really good actor, but he spent like the better part of a decade, you know, monologuing about like the Sokovia Accords and why like teamwork's important and how he's the people's butt. And that in no way.
I respect that, but you're right.
It's work. It's something. But when you say like, how did you spend your 10 years, Chris Evans? You look at that and then you look at Daniel Kaluuya and you're like, okay, so you did Get Out. You did Judas and the Black Messiah and you did Nope. Like these are completely different experiences. So these guys are getting, like these Lakey Stanfields, Aldous Hodge, they're getting all these creative reps. And because the industry has rightly pivoted towards, we need more diverse stories, not just like in Legally Blonde 4, we need a couple more black people, but they're like, no, let's just tell like more diverse stories and let's tap these diverse filmmakers to tell these stories. Obviously, that'll be populated by some of these diverse cast members. So you're getting this boom and bust in content, which stands in such stark contrast to Captain America 6 and Bucky. And you get these really interesting creative roles that are giving these guys reps and giving these guys exposure. And it feels like a supernova on screen versus, you know, Ant-Man in Quantumania when you're like, oh my God, like, I don't even know what I'm looking at here. You know,
no, you're exactly right. Cause you think about Daniel Kaluuya, who is instead of like Chris Evans, who is acting opposite a tennis ball on a stick mm-hmm. in front of a green screen, trying to act with this alien or whatever the case may be. And you have Daniel Kaluuya sitting across from Jodie Turner Smith in Queen and Slim.
Yeah.
And you're also acting with other people who are really just hungry and dedicated to the art, more than just, and it's not that you can't be a great actor. I think, you know, I stand by that Scarlett Johansson is the rarity that can be great in superhero films. And then, but what she does is she's like, I'll work for scale to work on this film. You don't have to pay me $10 million. Yeah. You have to pay me $200 and I will be in Marriage Story. I will be, I will come and be in these roles.
I'll be in Jojo Rabbit. I'll do this because this is important for my skill set where I don't think maybe the long view has been taken with some of these other dudes. So instead, we have just this roster of incredible actors that are completely stealing the lunch money of any interesting white actor. Like, it's the worst time in the world to be Glenn Powell because I feel like in another age, he would be king of the world. But now, like, I mean, there's no reason to cast him when you can go down like a roster like this.
That's
you know?
That's
right. Really interesting.
That's good.
Okay, let's go now and talk about, you know, we talked about like what's happened. Jamie, do you have something like you want to predict or maybe something that you think will have its lunch money stolen?
Yes. And this is unhinged. Please know that. Okay. And here's what happened to me. Jennifer Garner imprinted on me with Sydney Bristow from Alias and Jenna Rink from 13 Going on 30. Now, listen, her lunch money has been stolen many times in many ways. First by her actual children, Violet, Serafina, and Sam. As is the case in many women's professional industries, children are resume thieves, right? Because often the burden is put on the woman to raise children and be present, right? Then her lunch money was stolen by her actual agent and manager because they tried to make her into an everywoman. Oh, she can be a best friend. She can be a spy. She can be a superhero, a doctor, a mom. And she doesn't really, she's not really great at any of them. Like, she's really not dynamic in any of those roles. And then in come three women. Nepo baby Gwyneth Paltrow, same age. Do I think Jennifer Garner could have been on Glee? Yes. Could she have been dying on Contagion? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Jen started a baby food company, you know, very successful. But Goop, which is mostly illogical, stole all that lunch money and was like, bone broth for babies. And then you have Nepo wife, Leslie Mann. Do I think Jennifer Garner could have been in The Friend and Knocked Up or Funny People or the wife to Paul Rudd in This Is 40? Absolutely. But her husband, Ben Affleck, was making Gone Baby Gone and The Town in Argo, and there was no place for her like there was for Leslie Mann in Judd Apatow movies, right? And then the third woman is Kristen Wiig. Now, Kristen Wiig is a comedic, like, all-star, right? I don't think that they can compare in that sense, but I do think Jennifer Garner's best role ever is 13 Going on 30, because I do think when she's fully invested in the comic elements of a film, that's when she succeeds. They are the exact same age. Would you like to know? And they star in one of their first films in the same year, 2003. Now, same age, 2003, Jennifer Garner has 16 movie credits since 2003. Kristen Wiig has, 49 credits since 2003.
Whoa. And I feel like she's not worked much in like the last 2-3 years.
She hasn't, because she waited. What did she do? What did she do? She waited to have her kids until she was 46 years old. Because
also, she was the weird villain in Wonder Woman 2, and it just was weird. It was weird.
I'm not saying all those credits are good. Like, be clear. Not all those credits are good. But sometimes, like you always talk about, like sometimes it's at bats, right? Like sometimes, how often can you just show up? And again, what you just talked about, it's all about reps. And then, of course, that nanny and that SNL producer stole her husband lunch money, right? So it's time for her to steal. And I think that she can steal the lunch money of One Jada de la Rentas, all right? Jennifer Garner has a pretend cooking show that people freaking love. And let me tell you who people don't love. Jada de la Rentas. Okay, first of all, Jada named her daughter Jade, which is literally just Italian for like Jade in Italian is Jada. I don't think anyone should be named after their parent. I know you were named after your dad.
No. First name. But I don't go by that name.
But you don't go by the name. I don't think you should go by that name.
Yeah.
So I think she should be punished for that. Jada does not, famously, all of the people who've worked on her show have confirmed she does not eat any of the food she makes.
What?
She puts it in her mouth, chews it for the camera, spit bucket on the side.
Okay? Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that, guys. Let's normalize that.
Right? And then on Ellen... remember, I don't know if you remember this. Jada did a cooking segment on Ellen. Nicole Kidman was the superstar. Nicole Kidman turned to Jada as she's eating this focaccia and she's like, it's a little tough.
Ooh.
I know you're not meant to criticize, but it's a little tough. And then spit it out into a napkin.
Whoa.
Spit it out. And then of course there's the Bobby Flay, like, you know, mystery rumors, affairs, whatever. But my favorite Bobby Flay story of Jada is that famously, they ended up losing Iron Chef America to Rachel Ray and Mario Batali. And then she said, this is her direct quote. She said, I didn't speak to Bobby Flay for 8 months because he had the audacity to just laugh it off and take it in stride.
What?
That's a cuckoo person. That's a cuckoo person. She didn't speak to him for 8 months.
Jeez, man.
Because they lost a fake TV show. And anyway, of course, the main reason I want Jada's lunch money stolen is because, according to Delish, she starts every day for breakfast with a bowl of brown rice topped with olive oil and salt.
I mean, honestly, that sounds pretty good. I'm not going to lie. That does
sound
pretty
good.
Have
you ever had a waffle? Have you ever had a piece of bacon?
I do. I like those things too.
Have you ever had Cap'n Crunch? I'm just saying, this is what she eats every day of her life.
Is she to be trusted in matters of deliciousness? I don't know that she is.
No, I don't think Jada can be trusted. So that's why I say Jennifer Garner should be the new Jada De Laurentiis.
We got to fix Jennifer. We got to figure it out. I don't know if this is it. Like, whatever it is, we got to figure it out.
Yeah, because like on the side, I've loved her forever, but she is the weakest link of Party Down.
Not true. Take it back right now. Take it back.
Saying Adam Scott is carrying her on his back.
Listen, I just continue to love the most recent episode where Jane Lynch keeps saying the F word out of stress and duress. God, it's a miracle.
It's too good.
It is my miracle. Okay. I'm going to hold on to it. Okay. The thing that I think will have its lunch money stolen, I think we're actually watching it. We are in the middle of this. Okay. We're middle of the story, and it is, it's BK. It is Burger King is having their lunch money stolen. So I'll honestly, you could even call it like having their lunch money like relegated, you know, because I think I'm going to speak broadly here. Here in the South, you know, my neck of the woods where I have experience in terms of mass available fast food burger chains, I feel like it's pretty much been McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, and Sonic. Okay. That's kind of what it was for a few decades. And then maybe about 20 years ago, it went McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, Sonic. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know. But honestly, I don't know the timeline of Sonic. That could have been invented like 10 years ago. I'm not sure. But that was the top three, right? Wendy's supplanted Burger King. But now Burger King is about to get outpaced by Sonic. Not because of anything Sonic is doing, mind you. I went there the other night to get the kids slushes. They were like, we want slushes. And I was like, okay, great. Great excuse for me to go down the road and just listen to podcasts and get some slushes.
Right.
I waited at the window for 25 minutes.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. For three slushes, Jamie, two blue raspberry and a grape.
Were you in the drive-through window or like a slot? Okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to get stuck at a slot, okay? Like, you're going to have to speak to me. Traffic will dictate that.
And I do just want to speak for the record. You only go to the drive-through if you're getting drinks. You cannot get food through the drive-through at a Sonic. You have to pull into a spot to get food from the drive-through.
No, I will go. I control my destiny. Traffic will ensure that you will speak to me. I'm not going to just stare at a screen at a drive-through slot. That's ridiculous, okay? But so two blue raspberry, one grape slush, you know, not difficult drinks. I'm not saying I know what like how slushes go, but I feel like it's not that difficult. It's not worth 25 minutes. And finally, a guy comes to the window and hands me three chili dogs. Okay. He says, have a great night. And I held him for a second. I was like, wait, what did I do? It's because it has been a long time.
You took them. You took them from him.
He's handing them to me. So I'm like, I don't know. So I hold him there in the window and I say, no, we ordered slushes and these are chili dogs. And he goes, you ordered chili dogs. And I said, no, I ordered slushes. He goes, yeah. And I stopped and I was like, am I having a stroke right now? Like, am I doing this wrong? So eventually I get the slushes. So all that to say, Sonic is not like, you know, like really knocking it over. They're not like next level restaurant company. It's because of how bad Burger King is getting. And you know this is happening because they have committed so many dollars to advertising and marketing. I know your purse commercial, so you're not aware of what's going on right now.
Are they putting out a lot of commercials?
There is a earworm. I almost don't even want to say it because if I say it, people will get it stuck in their ear and they will be mad at me, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Whopper, 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 Junior, Double, Triple, Whopper. They've played this year round.
That's not a thing.
Yes, it is. It's everywhere.
Whopper, 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 Junior, Double, Triple, Whopper.
It's all you hear at BK Have It Your Way. Meanwhile, this is still the place where Robert Downey Jr. hit rock bottom because he ate a burger at Burger King and like bit into a Band-Aid and was like, I need to get my life in order. And that's how he became Iron Man. Okay. They're still doing that. They're spending all this marketing money. And this still looks like the set. The restaurant looks like the setting of a true crime podcast, you know, the original crime that animates this true crime podcast. And I just don't understand like what's going on. So these commercials are just like a Band-Aid on a decapitation. I don't know why they're doing it, but we're watching them get supplanted by Sonic and other.
No, for sure. Listen, I think what did it for Sonic was adding that pretzel stick. That thing is delicious.
So good. It's so good.
Okay.
It's not a chili dog though. Okay. There, I had some also-rans of potentials that I considered. I'll just toss them out.
No, I want to hear it.
We don't really have time to talk about them. I had James Marsden stole lunch, or Chris Pine stole James Marsden's lunch money.
God, yes.
I had Lindsay Lohan was stolen by Emma Stone.
Emma Stone has stolen a lot of people's.
Lot
of folks.
I don't even know if that's the best one for Emma Stone, but I feel like she's in the mix with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Steve Buscemi stole Willem Dafoe's. Jesse Plemons stole Dong Nall Gleason's. Philip Seymour Hoffman, John C. Reilly, maybe back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
Bradley Cooper stole Michael Fassbender's lunch money. Michael Cera was stolen by Jesse Eisenberg. And then I would say probably the easiest one is The Rock stole Vin Diesel's lunch money. Right.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
He's just like and nice, charismatic.
And Vin Diesel has never forgotten it.
Vin Diesel just looks like a giant tatted up baby. He just always has, you know, and The Rock does it.
Maybe
so
Twin
wins.
Diesel would have done better. Don't forget, he has a twin brother.
That's an album name. That's a band. That's a pot. It's something. I don't know what it is, but it's something, you know. Okay, well, that's our conversation on stolen lunch monies. If you have thoughts and opinions on our thoughts and opinions, please let us know at nextgen.com/498. All right, Jamie, you want to do some lights?
Let's do some lights.
All right, what is your red light this week?
Okay, my red light this week is rapid red light. Here we go. First of all, red light to him for rolling his eyes at me. Very frustrating. Snag their cherries. Where? Where many of you lost your virginity. Church. That's what did it.
I don't like about that statement.
Rapid red light. You know what we don't need? Another 72-year-old dad at a high school graduation.
Knox, we don't have time to explain this to you. And you don't really want to know.
To me, because every time a celebrity I love dies, I think of two celebrities I wish had died instead.
Red light to the internet for making this viral.
We don't have time to explain this to you. And you don't really want to know.
Rapid red light. Red light to Dwayne The Rock Johnson threatening to pummel Zachary the Chuck Levi. That's not a fair fight. Plus, it's a fight over very mediocre movies. We talked about it in detail in The More You Know. Second red light. Red light to me for underestimating the power of 21 Jump Street because allegedly it cured Kanye's anti-Semitism. What do you think 22 Jump Street cures? Like homophobia? Racism?
One can only hope.
Let's keep watching, y'all. Okay, third. Red light to Jim Toth, husband of Reese Witherspoon. Listen, she announced that they were getting divorced the week of her birthday and 2 days before their anniversary. How much does she loathe him? She sits in that Hello Sunshine and she's like, I should be on a boat in Tahiti. But because you lost $100 million of our money to launch Quibi that lasted for 7 months, I gotta still keep reading books like an a-hole so I can find something to adapt. Like, how chaotic is that? Fourth, red light to Jan, my mom, because she keeps calling it STD state. And I can't tell if it's on purpose or not. I can see why she's angry with them, but she does keep calling it STD.
They play good defense, man. They play good defense.
Oh, no. Fifth, red light to Olivia Wilde. In divorce court filings this past week with Ted Lasso, she suggested she was poor. She suggested. The Daily Mail wasn't going to sit for it, so they got the court records. In a declaration filed with the L.A. Superior Court, she has $645,000 in bank accounts,
okay,
$4 million in stocks and bonds, $6 million in real estate, totaling $10.5 million. And that
she's not liquid, Jamie. She's just not very liquid.
Listen,
you know?
She has a monthly income of $71,000 a month.
Dang.
Listen, and then, but she then says, I have $107,000 a month in expenses. Including $4,000 on laundry and cleaning services. What is happening at her house?
Not a math guy, but that feels like she's running at a significant deficit.
That's like
there.
Great. And then my final sixth red light to Harry Styles, my beloved, for making out with Emily Ratatouille on the street in Tokyo in maybe the most unsexy makeout video in all of history. Okay, I guess what they say is true. It's not the same as it was. Do you get it?
I don't.
Do you get it? That's his song, As It Was.
I don't know that I could identify any of his
music. Listen, is Emily Ratatouille the new Pete Davidson? That she's just, who needs a PR relationship? I am available for hire because my expenses are also $100,000 a month and I have $50,000 coming in.
She might be like the new, I don't know if it's like the Wilmer Valderrama, you know, effect, but the Eric Andre one really threw me. I'll be honest with you. That really threw me.
Listen, she posted naked selfies with Eric Andre, and now is making out with Harry Styles.
Let's don't judge it. Let's just enjoy the experience. Let's just be proud of her. You know, good for you, Emily Ratatouille.
All right, what's your red light?
My red light is So, you know, I love Chick-fil-A. I do. My kids love Chick-fil-A. We're there pretty regularly, you know, just in general, but also given the season of life we're in, very rushed, very scheduled. Chick-fil-A's obvious, you know, we're going to pivot there. And a lot of times I order through the app, you know, get those points, stuff like that. But sometimes, you know, we're going through last minute. I don't have a chance, so I got to go through the drive-through. And everything in the drive-through and in the restaurant is so automated and precise. It's really well done. Orders, I don't know, 95% of the time are completely accurate. You know, even with the sauces, it's really great. Okay. The only problem is, despite all this consideration and precision and the fine tuning, at the conclusion of my order, when I place it in the drive-through, I'm forced into one of the most chilling and frankly nerve-wracking experiences of my day. When I'm forced to do like a high-flying debit card insertion held by a teenager, like card reader situation, okay? Performing this high-flying feat of currency penetration is inappropriate, and it has to be a joke. I don't understand why everything else is so seamless. I wish I could just hand them a card. I don't care if they run away with it. I don't care if they liquidate my entire bank account. I'd rather that happen than me try to like awkwardly smash my debit card into the card reader. I just don't know why we're doing
so
that.
So you're having to swipe the card?
Not swipe.
Oh, insert. See, I've not paid with cash. I've not paid in a drive-thru at Chick-fil-A in 5 years minimum.
Because that's such a free time flex, and I'm happy for you.
It is, because I'm always like, let me do my order, and then I pay for it on the app.
I wish I could do that. Sometimes kids change their mind or whatever, so I have to do it. I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go again. And they won't take my money. Like, I want to be like, I'm just going to start dropping my card right before I place the order and just be like, you can do it. You do that card. You do that. I don't care if you steal my identity. Just don't make me do this with you.
God, those policies. Precarious. Those CFA policies are tough. They're tough.
What is your green light this week?
Okay, my green light this week is a new book. It's called How I'll Kill You by Ren DeStefano. It is a serial killer murder mystery family drama. Guys, what's better than twins? Triplets. Listen, this follows three identical twins, triplet sisters named Iris, Sissy, and Moody, who they're abandoned as children and they're raised in foster homes. As you know, I was a social worker back in the previous life, worked in foster care and adoption. And so I loved this kind of component of it. Now, we are now with them as 25-year-olds, and Moody and Iris may or may not, in honor of Women's History Month, have a history of killing men. And then their sister Sissy comes in and cleans up the mess. But now it's time for Sissy to kill her first person.
Great.
And their model is make him want you, make him love you, make him dead. And then, but the problem is, Sissy, this is not a spoiler, but Sissy may or may not fall for her first potential victim. It's chilling, it's dark, it's twisty, and weirdly, quite heart-wrenching. Like, it's really lovely at the end. So this is a fun, like, spring, you just want to sit on the porch and read something fun and frothy and has a lot of murder. This is a book for you. This is a book for you.
Okay, I've got a book as well, and it is, it's called I Have Some Questions for You, and it's by Rebecca Mackay, and I was sold when I saw someone describe it as twisty, immersive whodunit, perfect for fans of Donna Tartt's The Secret History.
Like, that's, you love that, yeah.
It's my book, I have a special place in my heart for it, so I was like, I gotta check this out, and then I read the summary, and I was like, I was even more in. So it's the story. It's told from the perspective of the main character, Bodie Kane, who is a film professor and true crime podcaster. She's returning to her private boarding high school to teach a class on podcasting, but it's complicated because while she was at the school, her roommate was murdered, and an athletic trainer was eventually convicted for the crime, but true crime fans on Reddit don't believe he did it. And Bodie, even though initially she's like, I don't want to do this again, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, she starts to believe he didn't do it either. It's a great story on bias, on shifting perspectives, and how you can never really know how you're perceived. But it's also a really, smart commentary on true crime podcasts and the amateurs empowering them, both for really good, but also for really bad. So I highly recommend it if you like anything.
Okay, I want to read that.
Yeah, it's really, really, really well done. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. And before you go, remember, anytime you do any shopping on Amazon, make sure you go to amazon.com/shop/thepodcast. First, so you purchase our affiliate link. If you're first using that link this week was, Jamie, this is just brown cow yogurt.
Okay, did you know that there is a difference between brown cows and black cows?
Besides color, I did not.
No. Okay, so black and white cows are called Holsteins or Holsteins.
What?
And they are used because they give a lot of milk. And then brown cows are called Jerseys. And they give less milk, but more cream.
Oh, don't love that.
I didn't like that phrase, but gross. I understand why you might like brown cow yogurt. Okay, 2,000 reviews, 4.7 stars. People freaking love this, except Katarina. She left a one-star review titled, "Why?" And then she said, "I've been buying brown cow peach flavor for over 2 years. It was awesome. They stopped selling that flavor everywhere I've checked. So disappointed in the company, and I'm a Coloradian where these are made. So don't think because I'm in Texas by no choice of my own that I'm complaining." Katarina, are you okay? Look at blink twice if you're okay in Texas. Why?
A lot of pain behind those eyes, Kunu.
All right, you guys, don't forget the podcast live tickets go on sale April 4th for BFOTS, April 11th for FOTS, and for subscribers to Note for the Audio, and then on April 12th to the public. You can click the link in the show notes to learn more or go to knoxandjamie.com/live. I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Knox Coy. You find me on socials at Knox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Whopper, 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 Junior, Double, Triple, Whopper, Flame Grill taste with perfect toppers, I rule this day. Lettuce, mayo, pickle, ketchup, it's okay if I don't want that Impossible or bacon Whopper, any Whopper my way.